righty, ladies and gentlemen, friends of all ages, automotive enthusiasts, friends from every remote area of the planet Earth, you've done it. It's true. You've clicked that button to listen to yet another...
Kevin, another triple crown winning episode of V8 Radio.
Shazam! Triple Wow. Well, that would be a heck of a winner because the Triple right? Crown was a pretty serious deal. But I'll take that victory. Heck yeah.
Dig it.
This is the V8 Radio Podcast. I'm Kevin Oostie, joined, as always, by our esteemed co-host, Mr. Mike Hubal Clark. What is shaking?
Yay, man. You know, I'm just doing my thing out here. Just enjoying the weather and having a good time.
Yeah, the weather is really nice.
Yeah, it's been pretty good lately, so no complaints out of me.
Good. You know what else causes no complaints?
Tell me.
It's when we start our V8 Radio Podcast off with a trivia question.
Ooh, do tell.
Yes. So we kick off every one of these silly episodes with an automotive trivia question, and then we provide the answer at the end of the show. So it, you know, really entices people to... And it doesn't really do anything. I'm not going to lie to you. It just gives us something to do between shows, you know, to dig one of these up.
For sure.
Have you, in fact, found an automotive trivia question?
I have found an automotive trivia question. I've got a couple in the chamber, and this one I'm taking to the head of the line, as this was actually a collaboration between myself and our parts manager, Mr. Brian Wibbenmeyer of the V8 Speed and Resto Shop.
Nice.
So we were talking and we said, hey, this would be a great trivia question. I says, yes, it would be, and it's going to be. So here we go. So Kevin, what model years was the Corvette available with fuel injection?
What model years? All right. Corvette and fuel injection. Okay. Well, the first year for Corvette fuel injection was 1957. And that was the ramjet fuel injection system. So I'm going to say 57, 8, and 9 for sure. 60, 1, 2, 3, and 4. So what do we got? 57 to 64?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think it went away in 65, perhaps, to return in 19... This is a tricky one. I know it was back in the 84 model year because there's no 83 with the the ceasefire. I'm sorry, the crossfire injection.
Nice.
And then, of course, it morphed into the tune port fuel injection, the TPI, and then it went on from there to the all the rest of it, the LSLT and whatever they got now. But... I want to say that the crossfire injection appeared in the last years of the C3. So before the C4 generation. So that'd be 81 and 82. I will also say that the crossfire injection appeared.
Okay.
Did anybody write that down? Because I don't know.
I'm writing it down. Yeah.
So 57 to 65, 81 and up.
81 and up. 81 to present. Nice. Not bad. Not bad. Great answer.
I guess we'll find out.
We'll find out at the end of the show.
And there might be a sleeper in there, like it might have gone away for 59 or something. I don't think so, though. I don't think so. But those early years are pretty sketchy.
Okay. So to cap it off, you said 57 through 65 and 81 to the present day.
Yeah, I'm not sure you could get a 65 with it. Yeah, maybe you could. I think you can, actually. Yeah, I'll stick with that answer.
Okay. All right. Duly noted. All right. What do you got for the cue?
Nothing like that. Goodness, criminy. Mm. Jeez, what the hell are you doing to me?
Well, it's been, a couple of minutes here. We got to get our juices flowing again.
Yeah, and you know what they say around here at the V8 Radio Podcast? Everybody loves Corvette trivia.
Well, they do, right?
I know they do. There's just so darn much of it.
Mm-hmm.
Not to trivialize the Corvette, but goodness. Okay, I got one for you. I have two. Which one do you want? A or B?
Ooh, B.
B. Okay, I'm going to give you A anyway because it's what I want to do.
Right on.
Name two car companies that built a car named the Champ.
Oh, my gosh.
Actually, should have some Rocky music in there.
Named
Gonna
A.
Fly Now. Gonna try now.
Oh, man. Here we go.
Uh-huh.
All right. Two car companies
that
named a car the Champ.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
And that's not code for, like, the Ali or the Muhammad Ali or, you know,
right,
the Sugar Ray Leonard or
anything. Sure.
It's actually the Champ.
The Champ. Oh, man. Okay.
There might be more than two, but I definitely know of two.
Okay. Well, this is going to just be a wild guess all around because I've never heard of the Champ before.
Really? Wow, all right.
Really? Yeah, I stink.
You ever hear of a fuel-injected Corvette?
Yeah, I have heard of that, but not the Champ. All right, then. I'm going to say our friends from the land of the rising sun at Datsun came out with a Champ, and I'll also say AMC.
Ooh.
Came out with a Champ.
You know, if those two cars went head-to-head, it'd be like a battle of the champions. You know, it could be like the rumble in the jungle right there.
Oh, wow, the thriller in Manila, so to speak.
That's right. Okay, so the Datsun Champ and the AMC Champ. All right. Final answer?
Final answer. Good heavens.
All right.
See, I give you questions that are good. You give me these oddball ones.
What was odd about that?
Who's ever heard of the Champ besides you? Did
it
sell?
It was an even number. Oh, yeah. Well, we'll find out. I don't know.
Okay. Maybe
it did. I never owned one. How about that? But I've ridden in two of them.
Really?
I've ridden in two of the same one. How about that?
Okay, the same one twice. All right.
Okay. So enough of that. You'll find out the answers at the end of the show if you choose to stay with us that long, if we don't put you to sleep or scare you off or something. But
there's no way we're going to sleep because you've been to some exciting stuff recently.
I really have, and it was great. The most recent. So we got two main topics here on this episode.
Ooh.
That one of which you and I joined our friends once again on the Stubborn German podcast recently as kind of
yes.
a crossover. But I'm not sure about the whereabouts of that episode because there might have been a technical glitch on that one.
Oh, so, right. Oh, man.
We could kind of go over that's the story we revealed there in a little more depth, which leads into the second major topic, which is the Triple Crown of Rotting. And how about that? We got two big shows lined up in one.
Just, I mean, it's craziness. We need three big shows for it to be a real Triple Crown.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, well, you get two for the price of none, so that's not bad.
How about that?
So, it's been a little bit since we released the last V8 Radio podcast. We apologize for that, but the reason for it is because things have just been so gosh darn busy with travel and events and getting schedules to line up. Very busy summer, and I will say that the anybody who suggests in any way that the performance automotive industry, the automotive aftermarket, the sport and hobby of cars is in some way slowing down, that you are out of your tree.
Whoa,
because
how about it?
It is not. Yeah. So much going on. And it's just a great time to be an enthusiast. So starting, you know, off with that, the first of which you've undoubtedly, as being a repeat listener here on the V8 Radio podcast, heard me allude to my pet project that I want to complete, being a documentary on the Cadzilla, the stories behind the development of the Cadzilla Custom owned by Billy Gibbons of ZZ Top, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've heard me talk about that.
Yeah, once or twice. I've heard you mention it in passing.
Yes. Well, learned a few things about that project, about the car, as a matter of fact. And
really?
Yeah, and I believe last time we chatted, I was communicating with our friend, Mr. Jimmy Shine at Shine mm-hmm. Speed Shop, correct?
Correct.
Well, a few weeks ago, 5 p.m. in the afternoon on a Thursday, I get a text, and it's a text that is sent to me from Shine, but it is forwarding a text from the Reverend Billy F. Gibbons himself.
Praise be his name.
Yes. All hail the blues. And Jimmy says, "Hey, it's on. See below." And the text from the Rev says, "Hey, Jimmy, tell Kevin that we are in town doing a show tonight. And if he wants to join us, that there'll be some tickets at Will Call, courtesy of us, and hope he can come and enjoy the night."
How crazy is that?
That was insane, dude.
Yes. Yes.
It still blows my mind.
Yeah, it's like you completely fanboy out when you see something like that. Like, oh my gosh, I got tickets from the Reverend himself.
Yes, right, exactly. That
yeah.
has literally never happened to me before. So it's 5 p.m. on a Thursday. The show starts at 6:30, and it's about an hour away from, hour and 20 away from where I live, or where a shop is anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell Kelly, I'm like, "Hey, we got to go." Right. And she's like, "Go where?" And I said, "Look, I just got this text. We're out, man. Let's go get cleaned up and go." Mm-hmm. So we jump in the truck and we head back to the house. And on our way, she's like, "You know, as much as I love ZZ Top and Gibbons and all this stuff, I'm not a huge fan of, you know, loud music and big crowds right now. And I got some stuff to do. So why don't you call your buddy Good Time Jimmy?" AKA Grady,
right.
Who is our friend we've mentioned before here, who just kind of lives for adventures. And I said, "Are you sure?" And she's like, "Yeah, no, he'll appreciate this a lot more. And why don't you guys do this?" So I said, "All right." So in typical fashion, our buddy Grady in the past has contacted me and picked me up with no insight on what we're doing.
Right. No warning. Let's go. Get your coat on. We're heading out the door.
In fact, you're the poster child of that when he picked you up from the airport in Vegas several times.
Yes, absolutely. It's never a dull moment with Good Time Jimmy.
The one of which in the white chopped Cadillac limousine with Elvis behind the wheel, right?
Oh my gosh, how good was that? That was insane.
So I thought, well, here's my chance to kind of throw a little payback in that direction. So I texted him and I said, "Be ready, because I'm going to pick you up in 15 minutes, get shined up." And his response was, "Can I have basically 30? And I said, "No." So he responded back saying, "Okay, my wife and I were going to have dinner, but I've canceled that. So, you know, okay." So I had gone home and put on some nicer clothes than I was wearing. Mm-hmm. You know, I certainly didn't get, you know, all dolled up, but yeah, presentable for sure.
Sure.
So I pick him up and he's like, "Oh, you weren't kidding. You said get shined up." And he's wearing a Bonneville t-shirt. He's actually wearing a shirt from the Black and White Bar, which is a little bar in Wendover, Utah, and a pair of shorts. And he's like, "Is this going to be all right?" I'm like, "Yep, it's fine. Let's go." So we're driving along and he didn't ask a word. Didn't say a word. Just, I mean, about like, "Hey, where are we going?" It was just all
right.
In fact, we ended up chatting about his daughter graduating from college and what she's going to be doing and all this kind of stuff. And driving along, nothing. So finally, we get off on the exit where the concert venue is, and he starts to pick up on it. And he's like, "Huh." But it was fun because there was one of those flashing signs out in front for the parking. And it says, "Parking to the left." And then it says, "Leonard Skinnerd, parking, Leonard Skinnerd." And he goes,
"Nice.
We're going to go to the Skinner concert?" And I'm like, "Yep." So he's like, "Oh, cool. Right on, you know." Well, Skinner was a headliner and ZZ Top opened for him, but it didn't say that on the sign. So he still didn't get it, you know.
Ah, okay.
So, and he's not the world's biggest Skinner fan, or at least he is now, but wasn't at the time.
Right.
And we drive up and park and go to Will Call and grab the tickets, and it was at that point that I said, "Yeah, look, ZZ Top's opening. And he's like, are you kidding me? And I said, nope. And then I showed him the text and he goes, you got invited to be here? I'm like, yep. And he's like, and you brought me? I goes, sure. And he's like, oh man, this is awesome. So once we got in, it was great because we had Will Call, kind of special deal, just walk through and
right.
Go get a beverage and go hang out. And I had texted his tour manager. I called Jimmy Shine back and I said, dude, thank you so much for hooking this up. And he's like, no, yeah, go have a good time. So Gibbons' tour manager and I texted back and forth very briefly. You know, he's like, how many tickets do you need? And I told him, and he's right. like, okay, they're down there, and great. And while we were on site, I had just sent everybody a message saying, hey, made it, thanks, we're in, you know, looking forward to it. So the show was phenomenal. It was great. We were in like the 10th row, right in the center.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah. Great venue, open air, outdoor concert with a roof over the top kind of thing. And you know, giant screens, and the sound was killer. And Billy and ZZ Top just killed it, crushed it.
Nice.
It was great. It was like they played their greatest hits album and then a few others in there and some other blues stuff. And so the set list was right on. It was really, really nice. And then afterwards, you know, we stayed for the Skynyrd concert. And that was tremendous. I was like,
really?
I was not expecting that, you know, because Skynyrd's one of those bands who, unfortunately, we've heard so much, so many times, all these years, that you don't really listen to them anymore. You just
right.
You hear them, right? You hear them. You don't listen.
Sure.
And today, I don't think there's any surviving members of the original band. So, but there's Van Zandt's brother is singing, and you know, there's some people that were very close to the circle, but it's not the original people. So a lot of people kind of wrote them off, and they addressed that in the show. They're like, hey, you know, we'd like to point out that people, they call us like a tribute band, you know, because it's not the original people,
right?
And we are cool with that because we are a tribute to the greatest rock and roll band ever.
Nice.
Yeah, oh, totally, yeah, right. If people still had lighters, they'd all be up, you know.
Nice. Nice.
But at the end of the night, we just we headed out and enjoyed the fact that that a communication line has been opened now, you know. And I got back to the office the next day, and you know, well, Kelly was like, did you get backstage? Did you go hang out with him? And I said no, and I'm okay with that. I've had that experience with him a long time ago, actually in Nashville. Back in 99, I think, on the Power Tour. But I was just an invited guest. You know, I wasn't trying to push anything, or I was just appreciating the fact that I got to see an awesome show and he reached out to me. And that was so cool. And when I started to unravel this little thing, recently I had sent Jimmy Shine this proposal kind of outline of what I want to do on this documentary. And he forwarded to BFG, and I now have verification that he truly did, because Gibbons now knows that I live in this area and knew he was coming to town and said, hey, I got an idea. Why don't you come out? Have a nice time. So,
that is fantastic. My goodness.
It was a treat. Way cool. It was a treat. Yeah. It was just a special, nice thing, you know?
Yeah.
So cool. And I'm, you know, I'm pretty convinced that I'm gonna do this documentary project at some point. And there's still some things that got to line up, but I'm not beating it to death. And I'm not gonna, you know, I'm not gonna make it not happen by being annoying about it. Things are just kind of falling into place, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're being really cool about it. It seems like everyone that you have reached out to has been pretty cool and on board about it. And it sounds like the Reverend is going to be on board with it as well. So, I mean, things are really falling into place.
Shine alluded to it already. He's like, oh, yeah, he's totally down with it. It's just the guy's on tour right now. And, you know, he puts out more energy every night at his age than I do, like, all year. So now's not the time. Let's just let the man do his job for a little while.
Right.
You know, once he gets off the road for a few and kicks back, then we'll talk about it, you know?
Yeah.
So, Yeah. So that was the one big one, but the next one was the Triple Crown of Rodding, and I just got back from that a couple hours ago, and boy, did that event put fuel in the tank, man.
Really?
Holy oh my gosh. Yeah, I'm in awe. I'm totally in awe. So,
that's killer.
Yeah, this is beyond a car show. I don't even know if I
really?
Can. Really? I can't do this justice. You have to go to get it. And I think in a small part, my experience was different. I mean, everybody's experience is going to be what it is. But many people had the same that I did. And what we came away with is that show was good for the soul, man. It was
nice.
It was nice. And it all came about, interestingly enough, for me anyway, when you and I and our buddy Grady went to Cleveland.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which we had talked about on this show. And we met with our friend Gary Case. And Gary is a premier event promoter and a hot rodder to the bone and just a guy who gets it. And, you know, earlier this year, he was telling us, you know, I'm doing this Triple Crown of Rodding event because I think everything's in line to really do a good show that's got the right people and the right cars, the right place and all that stuff. So that spawned some conversations between Gary and I, and I ended up doing a couple of promo videos for the Triple Crown because I've known Gary a long time and I know that he says he's going to do it. It's going to happen and it's going to be top notch. So sure. Why would I not want to have any kind of association with that? So made a couple videos and things keep getting added to the show and it's growing and growing. And finally it's time to go. So Kelly and I ended up trucking down to Nashville, and we ended up getting a campsite at a little place 15 minutes away from the Nashville Super Speedway, which is where this thing was held. And the campsite was awesome. It's got a water park and a lake and all this stuff.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we didn't really get a chance to use any of that because we were there for business. But just as a nice, clean getaway, at the end of the day, it was perfect, and we had perfect weather and, you know, everything is great. So one of the cool things about the Triple Crown of Rodding is that it's only 2 days long. It's a 2-day event. A lot of events are Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And what Gary realized, and Bobby Alloway is the other event organizer, and Bobby, of course, is one of the greatest custom car builders ever. And they know that it takes a lot to be a vendor or a participant if you got to stay there all day Sunday and try and get home at night and get yourself to work on Monday. So it ended up kind of putting a little bit of a time pressure on the whole thing because you've got all these things to see and do in just 2 days, right? Which was, you didn't want to waste any time. And when we got there, I think the best way to describe this thing is if you were a car fanatic and you went to shows in the 90s, 80s and 90s, like the big ones, like the Hot Rod Super Nationals and Canfield, or the Carcraft Street Machine Nationals and DeCoin, or any of the, you know, the really big hot rod shows back then, before the internet, before all the different magazines niched everything out to being like just a Mustang show or just a custom show. Everything was there, right? Trucks and cars and hot rods. And back in the days when you didn't have a lot of choices, so everybody went, you know, lots of people went to these events. That they all changed because of all those factors. Magazines happened, different events popped up, the internet, blah, blah, blah. And then, of course, you know, the past 3 years with whatever COVID thing we went through. But this event seems to have completely picked up right where those left off.
Really? Wow.
Because it was a smattering of everything. There were cars, trucks, customs, hot rods, muscle cars. You name it, it was there. But what was really over the top is that I have never seen so many ultra high caliber cars in one place at one time ever.
Wow, no kidding.
Ever.
Huh.
And that was by design. And so Alloway and Gary, when they were putting the Triple Crown of Rodding together, their mission was to reach out to all the top builders and all the winners of all the big events and invite them all to this show, right?
Yeah.
And they came. So there was multiple Riddler winners on hand. There was America's Most Beautiful Roadsters on hand. There was Slonecker Award winners on hand. There was every type of trophy winning car out there was there from the past, you know, 3, 5, 7 years. And they were all competing for these new Triple Crown of Rodding awards. So last I heard, and this is unofficial, I don't know, but I heard somewhere in excess of 1,600 cars.
Holy cats. Are you serious?
Yeah, it's a good size show. Yeah. And of course, all the people that went along with it. And they sold out at over 110 vendors. Over
That's
110
awesome.
Vendors. It was insane,
I love it.
Man.
Yeah, man.
And again, you remember back in the day when you'd go from truck to truck to truck to truck, you know, and they're all there. Everybody you want to see is there. They were. They all came. So every big name in parts was there. Billet Specialties and Holley and ARP and you know, CPP and LMC Truck. And it just goes on and on and on. And then all the top builders, you know, most of them had their own displays there too. So Rad Rides by Troy and Kindig and Greening. And I mean, you just name it, they're all there. And those guys also, most of them brought cars that were competing for the Triple Crown, so you can you know get the level that we're talking about of vehicles.
Right.
And Gary and Alloway know that part of this scene, you know, the biggest part of this scene are the people, you know. So
for sure.
By inviting all of these well respected and high profile builders to come out. They set up each day at 1 p.m. almost like a sports card convention, you know, where you get baseball players, they're all signing cards, you know. Here you had all these builders on this giant, you know, set of tables signing autographs. And they each time, I think, was 2.5 to 3 hours long each session, just because that's how long the line was. It was nonstop the whole
time.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was nuts. So my purpose there was to shoot, I guess, official video for the event, right? So I was covering cars and awards and vendors, the whole thing. You're trying to, because I joked with Gary Case, and I said, you know, halfway through, I said, you've got me shooting a promo video for next year that you don't need.
Right.
Because this place was packed, you know, and the autograph signing. So the Jimmy and Will Posey from Big Oak Garage, next to the Gerber brothers from Roadster Shop, next to Kindig, next to Trepanier, next to Chip Foose, next to Posey, next to Roy Brizio, next to Bobby Alloway, next to Jesse Greening, next to Jonathan Goolsby, next to the guys from you know Troy Ladd from Hollywood Hot Rods, next to the guys from Pete and Jakes. I mean, it just went down the line. All these great people and great friends that I've known and people, you know, like to see and are inspired by. So at one point I'm shooting that little autograph session and I'm like, you know, I'd like to get something signed. Right?
Troy, you got a minute?
Well, and that was just it, because I can't tell. I mean, you know, Alan Johnson from Johnson's Hot Rods. I can't tell you how many times I have done interviews with people and just not gotten the snapshot or not gotten the photograph or the audio. Because I'm there to work. I'm there to do my job.
Right.
But this time I wanted something from this day, because this was a special thing for all those people to be there. Mm-hmm. And everybody had the same feeling. It's like, this feels so good just to have this environment and see all this stuff and all these great people. So the only thing I had on me was the recent issue of Cartoons Magazine with the Ed Tilrock art on the cover. So I had everybody sign it.
No kidding.
Yeah. And it was pretty cool. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, this is awesome. You know, and hey, I used to read this. And I think we re-signed up Roy Brizio as a subscriber because he's thumbing through. He's like, oh, this is cool.
Right on.
So I got to break it to Ed that we drew all over his cover. I'll have to get another one from Mark Mathot and the publisher. But
yeah, I'm sure Ed will be happy about that regardless.
I would hope so. Cool, I got to send it to him then. Maybe have him sign off on it.
Yeah, for sure.
But the vendor presence, the car presence, the people, the way it flowed, nobody had any complaints about how to get in or get out. There was food. On Thursday night before the event, they had a hospitality night for the vendors, which was in this, I don't know, like an Embassy Suites hotel with a big ballroom, and it was hosted by the Brown Water Exchange, which is a bourbon barrel investment group, which is kind of cool.
Oh, nice.
So they were giving out shots of bourbon, and Brett Vogel, from our buddy from Ride Tech, was kind of behind that. He was there, and Billet Specialties was the other sponsor of the evening at that event, and a lot of our friends from Billet Specialties were there. I mean, it was just so many people. Jack Chisenhall and Rick Love from Vintage Air. I mean, nice. Everybody who's like really deep into this hobby, yeah, sport business industry was just there to have a good time. And we had a great time. I can't get enough of this thing. It was so great.
That is awesome, dude. I've not heard you gush about an event like this before. We've talked about SEMA and the McCacken show and the other the shows that you do for Bonnie Air. And, you know, you kind of say what's going on, but never once have you really, you know, been this emphatic and this, you know, passionate about what you're about describing something to us. It's really cool to hear.
Well, I'm glad. I don't want to sound like, you know, I'm being disingenuous, because this is all legit. And I value and love all those other events as well, but this one touched a different place.
Exactly. And that's exactly what I was trying to get at. I'm sure.
Yeah.
This was the first one, and it seems like it was hugely successful, and that really makes it special. And you were there. You were there for the first one. So that's right. It's almost like saying, yeah, I was there at the first SEMA show. That was, I was a vendor, or I was a participant there. So only the people who were there can say that now for the rest of the time the show's in existence.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and I don't know if it's anywhere near as significant as SEMA at this point, but your analogy's spot on. You know, it's like they say, these cars are only original once. Only the people that were there.
Exactly.
And that's really just, you know, kind of a slice of this whole thing, because all the other elements, again, how awesome the cars were, and just the logistics of the event, and this. So I got this sense of nostalgia, which of course is, you know, what drives all of this nonsense. But you almost felt like you were there before, even though this was the first one, because it was so many familiar faces and so many indicators that it's like all the great stuff you liked about previous events all rolled into one. You know, it was really cool.
Nice. That's kick ass.
It was kick ass. So on day one, I'm shooting interviews of some of the sponsors and vendors, and I'm over at the Rad Rides by Troy trailer, and Troy Trepanier's there. His son Jack is there. Of course, Moose is there. Troy's mom Judy's there. So that, you know, that's a big family reunion. Kelly's, you know, with us, and we're all hanging out, and I'm doing this, getting ready to do this interview, and Lisa from our office came with as production support. We actually hired her sister to be our camera person, so she was shooting video, and I was also. And so Lisa and Jamie are hanging out, and they're like, "Okay, are we going to do this?" And I said, "Yeah, Troy's over there talking to somebody. We got to give him a minute, you know, to finish his thing." And I look over, and Troy's like, "Oh yeah, hey Kev, just, you know, give me a sec, and no problem, you know." And Troy likes to talk, so he's going on and on. But I notice who he's talking to, and it's none other than Larry Erickson.
No.
Who, of course, was the guy that designed Cadzilla.
Well, well, well.
Right. So
here we go.
Exactly. So I wait for Troy and him to finish up, and just before they're done, I come up and I said, "Guys, I don't mean to interrupt." And Troy's like, no, we're done in a sec. And I've met Larry in the past casually, but he... You know, I don't want to say that I know the guy, and he certainly didn't know me very well. Mm-hmm. But I said, "Larry, my name is Kevin Ostie, and I'm not going to bother you with it right now, but I want to just throw something past you that I'm working on." And he said, "What's that?" And I said, "Well, I want to do this documentary on the stories behind the building of Cadzilla. And he looks at me and he gets this goofy smile on his face. So Larry, at the time, was head of Cadillac design at GM.
Oh, and, no kidding.
Oh, yeah. He's the guy. And he was also a big shot lead designer at Ford for a long time, too. And when he did the Cadzilla design, I mean, obviously he got it. I mean, it's perfect in every way.
100%, yeah.
Yeah, so he said, what do you mean? And I told him just a brief, one of those little qualifying stories to let him know that I'm not, you know, completely full of crap, that I have a few of these stories that I've heard, and, you know, and I mentioned a few of the people that said they'd like to be in this, you know, between Randy Lorenzen and Jeff Smith and you know, down the line. And he said, you know, that's really cool. He said, there's a lot of really great stuff there. He said, I'll be in this. I'll gladly help you out with this if you can tell the story that tells the story of the car in a proper manner that is accurate and demonstrates the character of Gibbons and the car at the time. He said, because there's a few out there that don't really get it. They got pieces of it, but they didn't get the whole thing. And I'm just going, oh, damn, heck yeah, you know?
Yeah.
Right. So I said, of course. And he goes, and the other thing is you got to tell the grit, too. I mean, I'm not going to be part of some sugar-coated thing. You know, there was some stuff that went down. And I said, well, sure, you know. It's not to cast any dispersions or muddy anything, but there's some interesting, fun stories that aren't exactly positive that were part of this, right? And I know a few of what he's talking about. I'm not going to share them here yet, but right. So he's like, all right, yeah, that sounds really cool. And then he goes off and starts talking about a few things. And Troy looks at me and he goes, you got to be kidding me. And I go, what? And he's like, that's really awesome. And I said, well, yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be really cool. So Larry and I exchanged information. So he took off and I said, all right, let's go do this interview. And I get Troy in position to get him all mic'd up and ready to go. And he goes, hey, I just got to tell you, if you do that documentary, that's going to be really something. And I said, well, I mean, I hope so. And he said, I'll never forget the day that I first saw that car. And he saw it out at, I don't know if it was Canfield, Ohio, or one of the shows. Mm-hmm. But he's like, it's a moment in time that I will absolutely never forget. And I said, well, how cool is that, that it's one of those time-stopping moments that doesn't involve, like, Kennedy getting killed, you know?
Right. Or the shuttle blowing exploding. Up. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Right. So he's like, no, yeah, it was a great time. And I said, well, listen, then you need to be in this. And he's like, are you kidding me? And I'm like, no,
yeah.
You're down.
100% he's like, all right, be in it now.
For sure, right. So there's so many people that want to be in this thing. I just got to pull all this stuff together. And we did Troy's interview, and it was so great. And here's where, when I said my experiences are a little bit different, I think, in some of these events. When I'm interviewing people and shooting video or if we're doing a podcast or whatever, we get front and center attention for somebody for however long, you know, we want, basically.
Right.
And I don't know if everybody gets that opportunity to be like, here I got Troy Trepanier's undivided attention for a half an hour, you know? Mm-hmm. And I know if anybody asks him any questions, he does that, you know, he'll certainly share everything. Most of these people are just really gracious with their time and they'll do that. But over the years, I've had this situation many, many times. I often get a chance to just chat, you know, and I kind of forget that we're rolling on it. You know, it's just a matter of guys hanging out and catching right. up. And it was fun to learn about this. They're doing a 36 Ford Roadster right now. They had it on display in bare steel, of course, and it, you know, the fit is like unbelievably perfect, and it's in bare steel, and they didn't buy a single part. They made the entire body, you know. They
holy
made,
cats,
yeah, they made everything on this car. And Troy said, this is going to be our best work. You know, just wait till you see this sucker finished. So that was really cool to hear a little bit of what they're doing on that. And then he's got some products out, one of them being an electric power booster, master cylinder combo.
Really?
Right. So I asked him how this differs from a hydro boost. And he said, well, a hydro, you got a pump and you got the plumbing and you got your master cylinder, and you got some stuff to to deal with. He said this is an OE piece that they've adapted to the hot rod market, basically. So this is current level technology, and it's being made. I think the internals are Bosch, and it's proven. And he's like, this is a game changer, man. And the way it works is when you step on the brakes, there's a basically a brake pedal position sensor that feels how far you've pushed it down. And there's these two motors right above it that just turn screws that apply the brake pedal, apply the master cylinder. And if you apply it slowly, they give it a little bit of assist. If you apply the brakes hard, it gives it a lot of assist. And there's very few components to leak or fail. And if it does, it is computer controlled, but if it does fail, it goes to manual. So you got manual brakes. So you don't have to worry about, you know, any kind of a thing. And he's like, trust me, it's a game changer. We put it on that car. We put it on this one. We put it on that. He's pointing all these cars. And so it was cool. You know, here's something new. Coming from him, and it was an interesting interview because Troy straight up said, you know, he's like, my first thing is I'm a mechanic, you know, and mechanically this makes more sense than any vacuum or any electric or hydro over electric or hydro booster unit out there. This thing just works. And a lot of people don't realize that Troy's a brilliant mechanic. They see him as a metal guy or as a custom car builder. But he's, you know, Bonneville racer, and he's a heck of a mechanic. So that was one tiny little example of these experiences that all rolled up into the Triple Crown of Rodding event for me and Kelly. It was phenomenal.
That's really cool, man. I mean, my God, what a great event. It sounds like unbelievable.
It was. And Kelly, being very involved in SEMA, in the HRIA, the Hot Rod Industry Alliance, they had little after hours. So Bowler Transmission was there, and Mark Bowler graciously hosted this little mixer for the HRIA people. So they were all there after. Kelly was bartending. She's pouring bourbon shots for people. And
nice.
It was kind of funny because you know, some people were coming up and you know, she'd pour him a drink, and the whole purpose was to network and to chat about business challenges that people are having and what can they do. And if somebody got a little bit, you know, started to become apparent that if they were really just there for the free drinks, she instituted a policy that said, for every drink, you got to answer a question about the HRA.
Right on.
First one up, of course, is what does it stand for? You know, and if somebody couldn't play, then yeah, you can't have a drink.
Ooh, man, that's rough, man.
I think there was only one individual that that had a problem with it.
Gotcha.
So another fun aspect was Brian Wibbenmeyer, who supplies you with trivia questions, apparently. Also,
that's right.
Attended with his brother Kyle from our shop, as and his mission was to talk to all the vendors and get face-to-face time with them and get questions answered and see what's new, and also to peek under the hoods of the cars and see what people are running and how things are looking on a lot of these things. So he had that look on his face, like, you know, mind blown right away. So that was pretty cool too.
That's awesome. I can't wait to hear more about it from him when we talk next. So I'm looking forward to that. So, well, I understand that you and I were talking about this I think a couple of weeks ago, and you said that the premier builders that were there were tasked with building a trophy to give away. Isn't that right?
That part was so phenomenal. So yeah, so the Triple Crown, again, today you go to a car show and the cheap ones, you get a Chinese plastic trophy, and it's like, oh, great, you know. And everybody complains about it. And everybody says, well, I'm not here for the trophies. I'm just here for the fun. And then you have other people who are like, no, it's all about the trophies. But what the organizers did at the Triple Crown is, first of all, they designed and had machined and then plated these amazing, tall, big billet aluminum trophies that all had, like, best street rod and best street cruiser and the best truck. Mm-hmm. So all the top six winners got one of these, almost like a Super Bowl-esque trophy, but with a hot rod on it instead of a football, you know?
Wow, that's cool.
Plus, those same six all got a custom-built Gibson guitar.
Really?
Yes, the pick guard was engraved with all the sponsors, and then up the fretboard as well. And they were all painted in Alloway black, of course, because Bobby Alloway does everything in black. So you wanted one of those, you know, if you won that stuff, you're like, now you got a real, you know, killer trophy. But to your point, all those top builders that were invited to be there, they gave them all a pick award. And it was open to any car on the lot, you know, anywhere. Right. If you registered your vehicle, you were in the running. And Troy Trepanier might pick your car. Jesse Greening might pick your car. Dave Kindig, you know, Foose, any of these guys.
Right.
And they were all tasked with building their own special trophy for the event. And oh my gosh, were there some cool stuff.
Is that right?
Yeah. So Ring Brothers, of course, they were also in the lineup of people signing autographs, and they had their celebrity pick award, and they built this billet polished, almost a pyramid type thing. And it had LED lights in it, and it had engravings and polish, man, and different fixture, you know, different textures. It was unreal. It looked like something that belonged in an art museum. And wow. Kyle Tucker from Detroit Speed, right? So he was another guy who was there signing stuff, and he actually drew a little smiley face on my Cartoons magazine, as a matter of fact. That was kind of fun.
nice. Way to go, Kyle.
Yeah, exactly. The Detroit Speed Award, they did almost a little takeoff of the Vegas sign at the top, and it had a little sign that said Detroit Speed, and the base all lit up LED in different colors and everything. And somebody made a buckle, you know, like a rodeo champion buckle, and that, right, that was their award. And then there was some others that were just, you know, really cool billet machinings that were polished and painted. And Posey did one that looked like the front end of a 50 Ford. So it had like a bumper thing with like a bullet nose kind of deal. And it was elevated with a piece of clear plexi below it that had an inscription of a saying that talked about how important it is to do things that you like to do, you know.
Nice.
Super cool. But I think one of the best trophies of all of them was the Roadster Shop. And those guys,
oh, yeah?
Somebody over at the Roadster Shop is really thinking. I know it's more than just somebody. But their graphics team and some of their idea people. So they did, of course, this event's in Music City. It's in Nashville. So right. They did a gold record.
Really?
So it's framed, right? You got this big frame with a gold record, and then the quote-unquote album cover artwork behind it. And you look across the top, and the album is a direct takeoff of ZZ Top's Eliminator. So it's the front part of a 34 Ford, it kind of looked like, with headlights, you know, the red, and the headlights are in the mist.
Yeah.
And across the top, at first glance, it almost looks like it's got the ZZ from ZZ Top. But it's not, because the ZZs are backwards, because they're S's, and it says Roadster Shop.
Nice.
And then this gold record. And I learned that our friends at Advanced Plating, who did all the plating on a lot of the trophies, and they did the official Triple Crown trophies, they've got several businesses, and one of them is a custom guitar business, and they also did the custom Gibsons. But they can press records.
Come on.
They've got a business, yeah, small record label, essentially, that they press for records for other people. And I learned that record, that Roadster Shop Gold Record Award, actually plays. If you have a record player that will play backwards, you can listen to what it says.
Come on.
Yeah, I don't know what it says, but there's something recorded on that backwards, and that's part of that award.
That's hilarious.
How cool is that?
I love it.
It is nuts. I mean, there were so many unbelievably creative elements of this event, and it just, when I said it put gas in my tank, this is what I'm talking about. You know, everywhere you turned, man, there was something. And the Roadster Shop also, they had a t-shirt that the Phil and Jeremy Gerber were wearing is black, and it said RS on the front. But if you look closely, I don't know if you're familiar with this, but in the 70s you could buy an aftermarket tachometer, and it was like a column mount, you know, round tachometer. The most popular one, of course, was like the Sun Tag,
yeah.
But there was one made by Dixco, D-I-X-C-O. And Dixco actually also did an aftermarket hood tack that looked very much like the Pontiac muscle car, you know, hood tack or the Buick one. But Dixco did a limited edition Don Garlitz column mount tack, and it had red and white stripes on it and blue with stars on the back of it. So it was like an American flag wrapped around a tachometer. Instead of having a red line, it went red, white, and blue line on it, right?
Nice.
And if you know, you know. And I saw their T-shirt, and they had that tack in a piece of art on their T-shirt. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, nice. the Don Garlitz Dixco tachometer. And they both looked at me like, yeah, you know what that is? I'm like, you're damn right I know what that is. I chased a broken one on eBay up to $200 one day. You know, I know what that is. So
that's awesome.
You know, everywhere you look, there was these little elements. And another cool thing about this was there was some charity fundraisers, and one of them was a 50-50 drawing for the Multiple Sclerosis Society. Mm-hmm. And the winner took home almost $12,000.
Come on.
Oh, yeah. But the other one was a charity auction of pinstripers. So they had like 50 pinstripers all in this garage, this paddock, because this was in the infield of the Super Speedway. So all the garages were filled with displays. And these guys are pinstriping mailboxes and guitars and panels and, you know, you name it. And they were auctioning everything off for the Speedway Children's Charity. You know, it was awesome. And these guys did all this for free. They just donated all their time, all their artwork. It was, I could have stayed in that room for the whole 2 days.
Right.
And it would have been awesome. You know, it was just, so man. As I'm walking up and down the paddock where all of the vendors are, it starts to dawn on me that I really miss seeing in person a lot of those colors and graphical elements of all these displays, all the logos, and mm-hmm. you know, there's a classic almost a brush script kind of font that's synonymous with hot rod stuff,
and yes,
you know what I'm talking about. And
sure,
you'd see like people with T-shirts, and the menu board was done in that font, you know, or there's flames on something or pinstripe. It just, everywhere you turn, there's the visual of the hot rod culture is all around, mm-hmm. plus the cars, plus the people. And then going out into the rest of the participant parking lot, where people came to display the car, you know, their own car. So not just the top, you know, craziness, the regular, you know, enthusiasts that came, they brought stuff that was insane. I mean, just awesome cars and trucks and hot rods and muscle cars. It was just, you know, it was darn near too much.
Wow, this really did gas you up, didn't it?
It did. It did.
This is crazy. I love it, dude.
And for all legit reasons, you know, not for anything else outside of the fact that I just really enjoyed it. Really, really dug it. So they're doing it. They got a 3-year deal with the Speedway. So this was number one. So there's a chance to go back next time and the time after.
Cool.
And it was very successful with the amount of people and vendors. And that's another great thing is there were a few naysayers out there who were like, yeah, it's a first time, you know, first time events are hard, you know, and sure. they killed it on the first one. So all of the vendors that were there have first right of refusal. They get to keep their own exact spot, you know, if they want to sign up for next year. And I've heard that most are doing that. Kindig was shooting an episode of Bitchin' Rides there. So that was pretty cool to see. And just all kinds of stuff, you know. It was
cool,
a good deal.
Cool, man.
Yeah.
Well, my gosh. With all the stuff I've been doing just pales in comparison. Jeez Louise.
Well, after I finished, you know, chatting with Trepanier and Larry Erickson, our little video crew split up, and I was going out where all of the judged cars were lined up because they lined them all up in a row, and it was like this unbelievable display. And what do I see? But the 2023 America's Most Beautiful Roadster winner, which is a black 32 Ford owned by Jack Chisenhall of Vintage Air.
Ah.
Jack is standing there by the car. He's looking at it, and he's talking to somebody. And I walk up, and he's like, oh, hey, Kev. I said, hey, Jack, how you doing? He said, good. And he goes, hold on a minute. And he grabs his cell phone, and he says, yeah, hello? Yeah. I don't know. You think I should? Well, I don't know. Okay, sure, I will. All right, fine. And he said, well, that was Rick Love, you know, from Vintage Air. And he said, Rick wants me to enter this thing in this Triple Crown. He said, I just brought it out to show it. And I said, I think you should probably enter it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an amazing car, right? And he's like, well, I guess. All right, whatever. They want me to, oh, sure, fine. So he goes in his little packet of stuff, and he's got his sticker that you got to stick on the windshield as a part, as a, an entrant, you know. And So he and I are chatting, and we end up having about a half an hour conversation about how to cool a flathead and this article that I had recently read in a 1952 issue of Hot Rod magazine where Vic Edelbrock Sr. was talking about keeping flatheads cool at high RPM on the circle track by shaving off every other impeller vane and then drill holes in the rest of them. Yeah, it's totally counterintuitive, but it allows these things to move water at high RPM instead of low RPM and cavitate. And he's putting restrictors in the cylinder heads and doing all this stuff. And Jack's like, yeah, I heard of that trick. No, I haven't heard of that trick, because his hot rod is a flathead. And, you know, part of the challenge is keeping these things cool. And so we had a really cool, you know, technical conversation. And I said, by the way, you know, he was the guy that was the project manager on Cadzilla and was with Billy Gibbons when they came up with that idea for the car. So I said, I'm still working on this thing. And and he's like, yeah, cool. Well, yeah, I'll be in that. You got Larry Erickson, you know, if you want me to do it, so sure. So it's like, yes, there we go. See?
Nice.
Yeah. And it's amazing to me how many people that car connected. And here we are, 35 years later almost, at this totally, you know, new hot rod event. And people are talking about it like it was yesterday. So again, that also kind of helped fuel why I had a good time at this event, because that project seems to be moving forward. And Erickson was telling me that he's got like 120 drawings from the design process of the car. And I'm like, oh,
really?
My gosh.
Ooh, if we can, yeah.
So at this point, my mind is going in 58 different directions. You know, I'm
trying to. Your brain must have been just firing like crazy.
I'm shooting video, I'm doing interviews, I'm thinking about how I'm going to edit this piece, I'm looking at cars, I'm getting ideas. I got a chance to interview Troy Ladd from Hollywood Hot Rods, and his 32 Coupe that he debuted a couple years ago at the Grand National Roadster Show. It won the Sloniker Award. It was a contender for the America's Most Beautiful Roadster that year. This thing is like my second or third favorite car ever built. I mean, it is unreal how beautiful this hot rod is. And to chat with him about the design decisions and the capabilities and what this thing does and the old Cadillac motor and all the stuff.
Yeah.
And then Ring Brothers, you know, they're good friends of ours. It's always great to see them. Their latest Camaro, 100% carbon fiber body, you know, 1,100 horsepower Wagner supercharged LS. You know, everything handmade, or I should say hand designed, then CNC'd, which got turned into a mold, which got, you know, molded and then body worked and built, and you know, just completely not next level, like 10 levels down, you know, just way down.
Yeah. My goodness.
So the inspiration for cool cars to build in our shop and to share with our team is pegged on 11. It was good. It was a great thing.
This is a great thing. I can't wait for the next staff meeting now. I got to hear all about it.
Yeah. Well, you will hear all about it.
Yes, they will. They will. How cool. I mean, 35 years later, and Cadzilla is still relevant and still on people's minds, and it's still interesting to people. It's crazy.
Yeah. And it really, again, kind of falls in line with these long-term relationship things that happen in this hobby and this sport. You know, if you're at a stoplight and you meet somebody with a last of the generation 65 fuel injected Corvette.
Go on.
And you chat with them for a minute, you're probably going to be friends with that guy forever. You'll see him 6 months from now and go, oh yeah, right. Hey, how's it going? You know?
Yeah.
That sticks for decades, as evidenced by this, you know, I mean, it's clear. And the cars hang around. We're all talking about, hey, you know, do you remember when Scott Sullivan brought out the Cheese Whiz Orange 55? Do you remember that car? You know which one I'm talking about? It was a hot rod top 10 in the 80s. And it's a one of the first modern styled 55 Chevys. And it was the joke was painted Cheese Whiz Orange. and Scott Sullivan built it out of Ohio, and him and Jeff Smith drove it across country in like, I don't know, 85, 86, had a big block in it. And it was kind of half pro street, but half custom. And he did a lot of really forward looking custom tricks on that. They brushed all the trim. They took the glove box and centered it in the middle of the dash and molded it in.
Really?
And flipped the glove box door open, and that's where the stereo was hidden behind. You know, pretty cool.
Yeah.
And there's a shot in the Hot Rod magazine of them actually pouring a jar of Cheese Whiz on the car, and it's the same color.
Yeah. Nice.
So there's an example where it's, oh, Scott Sullivan's here. Yeah, I remember that Cheese Whiz orange car, man. That thing was innovative. It was awesome. And, oh, look, there it is. It's parked right over there.
Holy cow. You
know, yeah, that kind of stuff happened. So it was something else, man.
That is something else. How crazy is that, man?
Yeah. So everybody needs to go before it gets too big. And I don't see this thing slowing down at all. And the other fun thing is this is the exact same weekend as the Holley LS Fest East, if you will, in which Trevor, our technician, and his wife, Trisha, took two cars down. Trevor took his ZL1 Camaro, and then Trisha took their C10 pickup truck and raced them both on the autocross and on the drag strip and everything.
That's killer.
I've
never been to an LS Fest, but I'd like to go to one of these days.
Yeah, I mean, a huge event. And so now you've got two giant, unbelievably great events going on at the same time, and neither one of them suffered. They were both huge. They both drew their appropriate crowds. Some people went to both, you know, because they were only a few hours apart. Bowling Green versus Nashville, so not terribly far apart. So that gets back to my opening statement of if anybody thinks that this industry is slowing down, you're wrong.
I love it too. I mean, I've learned just the short time that I've been really immersed into this industry. It is huge, and it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, I think, with, you know, the advent of the Triple Crown of Rodding and its success. And you have all the good guy shows, and you have the Street Nats. You have all these big shows still going on, the McCacken show, and even like the auction shows, like the Bear Jackson and the Mecum auctions, draw in huge amounts of people just to see these cars go across the block. So I don't see this slowing down anytime soon.
No, it's a giant culture, and it keeps going. And there was a lot of young people there checking
That's
the stuff
great.
Out, you know, bringing their own cars, appreciating, you know, some of the higher end builds from people you know, just totally digging it. And Steve Strope was there, got to hang out with him for a little while. I mean, just lots of people. So, yeah. And when you just went down that list of all those events, they just blanket the calendar, you know, from end to end.
Yeah.
All year long, there are very high-level, deeply immersive things to do with cool cars all year. It's great.
It is great. I love it. Mm-hmm. I love being in this industry. Hoorah.
And that's not even taking into account your unofficial stuff, your cars and coffees and your donut cruises and
right.
you know, your road trip events, your power tours, your drag weeks, your drag and drive events, your drag races, your circle track stuff, your other roundy rounds, your NASCAR, your NHRA, and now your F1. And I mean, it's just like, holy moly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's there. It's happening.
Yeah.
It's now.
It is. And you know what else is right now?
The answers to our trivia questions?
Yes. Do you see how all that built up to this?
Man, you, sir, are a consummate professional.
Because all of those events, all they want to know is two car companies that built a Champ.
And when the hell was a Corvette fuel injected?
Right.
Oh, man. All right. All right, so,
well,
Kev,
well, I was thoroughly humbled over the weekend. So you just keep going and just kick me in the nuts with this question. Because I'm pretty sure
okay.
I got it wrong. What do you got?
All right,
let
me wind it up here. All right, so Kevin, I asked you what years the Corvette was fuel injected, and you said 57 through 65 and 1981 with the crossfire injection to present day.
And I might throw a caveat. I know it doesn't count, but that 81 might not have been a crossfire. It might have been a throttle body. But anyway, go ahead.
Okay, fair enough. So the years that the Corvette was fuel injected, 1957 through 65. You got that right.
Hey.
And it was 1982 to the present day. So close. So close.
So close. Wow. What a great question.
Yeah, thanks. Well, we can thank Brian tomorrow for that one.
I will.
Yeah, man. Yeah, but I when we were thinking about it, I thought it was the crossfire started with the 84. I wasn't at that time aware that it started with the 82. But then
yes.
We dug into it a little bit and we found out the right stuff. So
right.
Stuff.
So if I remember correctly, the 82, it had a fender badge that said crossfire injection. It was all lowercase. It was weird. And then in 80, you know, they made it more high tech with the C4 style, but.
Right.
Yeah. Great question. Wow.
Thank you.
Surprised I got even that close.
Yeah. We thought we were going to, well, for a split second, I thought you'd get tripped up with the ramjet, but I'm like, nah, he's going to know better. So.
Well, thanks for picking another one that I knew some of.
Yeah, you betcha.
All right.
Maybe you can return the favor one of these days, you know, but.
I will.
All right. Appreciate that. All right. Keep talking.
Easy little two-parter. Name two car companies that built a Champ. And we have cue ball guessing the Datsun Champ and the AMC Champ. Both champs. All right. Well, those are great guesses, but actually kind of close in an interesting way. And I'll let you draw the parallels. The correct answer was the Plymouth Champ, which was actually built by Mitsubishi.
Really?
So, yes.
Okay. There's your Land of the Rising Sun.
Remember the Dodge Colt?
Yes.
Its sister was the Plymouth Champ.
No.
And those were
way.
Mitsubishi imports. So Datsun, close, right?
Kind of close, yeah.
And the other one, you said AMC, the other one was actually a Studebaker Champ pickup truck from 60 to 64. And AMC and Studebaker are kind of both in the same redheaded outhouse out there somewhere of American car makers. Both very revered, but both of them just off the mark a bit. So I think that I'm not going to say you were right, but I think that the overall ilk of your theme there was on the right track. So there you go.
Well, thank you for letting me down gently.
I do what I can.
I appreciate that. Oh boy!
It's all about building people up, you know. Not
right. Just to knock them back down. Oh boy.
Well,
that was a good question anyway too, though.
Oh, glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, man.
You're lucky you didn't guess the other one. Well, actually you did, and I changed it. So next time
great. I'm really gonna have it coming.
It sucks, I'll tell you right now. So you got that to look forward to.
Oh, awesome. I can't wait.
Oh man.
Criminy.
Okay. Well, so of all the stuff that I tried to share, I know I left a ton out and a ton of people out, but we will be releasing on our VATV channel on YouTube our overview video of the Triple Crown. And
good.
That's pretty cool. I'm excited. Right. I'm going to start putting that together like tomorrow, and because I want to bite off a bunch of this while it's still this fresh. You know, sometimes you shoot video of something and you revisit it a little while later and you're like, oh yeah, I think I remember that, but mm-hmm. I want to make sure I get my kind of outline lined out pretty soon. So just if you haven't subscribed to our YouTube channel, just go to V8TV and click that one, because you're not going to want to miss this. And I think there's something for everybody, and it should be pretty cool. Looking forward to putting that together. So
dig it, man. Right on. Looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah. Me too. All right, my man. Well, this was a lot of fun. I appreciate you letting me ramble on about this event like a, like a 12-year-old girl at a 1964 Beatles concert, but that's kind of how it went down for me.
Out.
I know. I didn't have anything to throw at the stage, but.
Nice.
But it was something else. So.
Yeah,
all right.
It sounds like it was really something else. That's great stuff.
Well, if you enjoyed this episode, you're certain to enjoy all the rest of the V8 Radio podcasts. And also the might as well, it's all the same price, click on the Bonneville Up to Speed podcast. We had a fun one. Our last episode got to interview the granddaughter of Burt Monroe, also known as the world's fastest Indian, if you've seen that film. Got to meet her out at Bonneville waiting for the track to dry, which kind of didn't really happen this year, but Bonneville Up to Speed podcast is something we also publish. But most importantly, click that subscribe on V8 Radio so that next time when we really put cue ball to the test,
we put cue balls in a vice
right, with this miserable trivia question, you'll be the first to hear it.
Oh, I'm lucky.
Yeah. See, you said you like this industry.
Yeah. I'm starting to rethink things a little bit here. Yeah, dang it. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's all I got. So for Mr. Mike Cueball Clark, I'm Kevin Oste, reminding you to keep polishing the plating, because you never know what you'll win with it, but at least you'll have fun doing it. And we will talk to you next time on the V8 Radio Podcast.